Hi, I'm Serena.
And I'm Rachel.
We're the hosts of Book Tales.
If you like reading books,
drinking cocktails,
and Scottish accents,
then meet your new favourite podcast.
Come with us as we explore different themes from romanticy to horror and everything in between.
We pair each book with a bespoke cocktail and tell you everything you'll need to make one.
And each week, play our fun game tailored to each book.
Find Book Tales wherever you get your podcasts. So grab your book.
Grab your booze.
For Book Tales.
Hi guys, I'm Bree.
And I'm Allie. This is Off Script.
If you think about it, books are potential scripts for movies.
When this adaptation happens, typically it's disappointing because they went off script.
In this series, we will be talking about how off script they went.
Hello!
And welcome
to Off Script,
a podcast
where usually we compare books to their movies, but today we got something else for you.
We have an interview with Bill Robertson.
Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure.
Yourselves?
I will introduce myself and all of my personalities. My name is Bill Robertson, and I'm glad to be here.
Okay.
From reading your little bio about yourself, you adapted Paradise, A Town of Sinners and Saints from a stage production to a film.
Yes.
What was that like? What are the challenges when you're bringing something from stage to film?
A really good question. For myself, I think it was, I had so many people in the beginning tell me, Bill, you can't do that. That's not how you do it. This isn't how you do it. And there were people who had not made a film before. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks for your, you know, lack of encouragement. But, you know, so I think really the first thing was the stage production of Paradise, a bluegrass musical, had two long runs here in LA and also at the Austin Playhouse in Texas. And we got rave reviews and audiences loved it. Some people would come in, like they used to fight with each other. It's like, I saw the show 7 times. I saw it 10. And I'm like, all right, so you don't have a life, but you like my shows.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
So we got this great response. And then we got Broadway involved. And they were just, oh my God. I know how they make money. They wanted to take the show that was successful and break it down to the bare minimum and then rebuild it. And my producers would have to pay them the entire time. A lot of money. So we did a 10-day workshop, and another theater out here, The Broad, which is very big, wanted it still, but it was no longer our bluegrass musical. They had turned it into a Broadway number. Literally, a Broadway show. There's 19 original bluegrass numbers by Cliff Wagner, and Tom Sage and myself wrote some of the lyrics, but we wrote mostly the book, which in a play means the script.
Okay.
And when I left the workshop, I thought I'd never wanted to write again. It was just awful. They were just, and these were all Tony winners, so we had to listen to them. So a little bit of time passed, and then we decided to put it up again, and it did very well again. And then it went to Austin, Texas, and over COVID, we were thinking about, well, how are we going to get it to off Broadway? To go to Broadway is, you know, minimum is like 7 to 10 million, just to open.
Okay. Holy cow.
And our producers, they didn't have that kind of money. Right. And so we wanted to get it out to the masses. So that was our main, that's the first thing I would say is, what is your intention? You know, we wanted to get it out to the masses because people enjoyed it. And we thought, all right, how do we do that? So this guy bumped, this guy I've known for a while, he did like 44 independent feature films. He ran Robert Duvall's company for about 11 years. And he saw the show and he loved it. He was like, Bill, what if we turn it into a low budget feature? And I'm like, what? Okay, sure. Okay. And so I had to raise the money. I had never done that before. You know, I had sold a couple scripts to Lifetime and one was turned into a movie. And, you know, I put up stage productions and I ran a sketch comedy show out of New York, Boston, and LA. And I wrote for Rick Dees on the radio and National Lampoon magazine and a bunch of stuff. But this was different. So we made it as a low budget film. I needed somebody who knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And he didn't raise a dime, but he talked to everybody who was interested and got them to invest more money.
Wow. Now,
we made this film. Oh, my God. We went through a couple directors, or actually one other director that we wanted to work with. And he just, his work ethic was just a little different. And decided not to. And it was over COVID, you know. And our producer presented this other guy to us. We shot a full length feature film after casting it. About 36 members on the crew. We rehearsed for a week. We laid down the music and rehearsed for another week. And we shot the film in 6 days.
Wow.
And a whole movie.
A whole movie. And it picked up distribution through Artist View Entertainment. And it went out on multiple platforms for about a year. And just recently, they pulled it off of a bunch. I think it's still on YouTube Movies, Paradise, mm-hmm. A Town of Sinners and Saints. And I think it's still on Google Play. But the way the business works, everything's very convoluted. And I had friends calling me, Bill, you must be making a lot of money. I ain't seen a dime.
It
broke me in one way. So, and it takes years. It takes a couple of years to make your money back on these things. So my distributor is now partnering with another distributor, and they're going to relaunch it in October. And it'll go on multiple platforms, and it needs to go into the foreign market. And that, it's where it hasn't gone yet. And you can hear the 19 songs. The soundtrack is on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, and YouTube Music.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ooh, you can listen to the 19 songs
anywhere.
It's very irreverent. It's fun. It's heartwarming. We push the envelope. Mary Sarah is one of the leads, and Mary Sarah was a finalist on The Voice.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And if you remember the movie Jersey Girl,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The little girl, Raquel Castro, is all grown up.
Whoa.
Amazing singer. Beautiful woman.
Really?
Yep. Cool. Diane Delano, people would recognize her. She just passed away over the past year from pancreatic cancer.
Oh, shoot.
She's in it, and she has a big role. I mean, she's out of her mind in this. It's so much fun. And then a couple other character actors and a Broadway person in John Root. But Mary Sarah's voice, she had the least amount of acting experience. So we got her an acting coach, but we wanted her voice and who she is.
Yeah.
She's just incredibly easy to work with. So nice. And as you watch the film, because it's different, the film is theater meets film meets reality TV. So it's got, and you'll notice, like, you might even hear a tiny laugh track in the beginning, like there's an audience, and then that kind of dissipates. And our director wanted to take on that ride that makes it very different. And it moves too. It moves. The second act, what I call it, just takes off. But there's so many fun songs, like, you know, Everyone Has to Light a Bag of Shit on Fire. That's one of my favorites.
That sounds amazing.
There's one that the evangelicals had a little bit of a hard time with the stage show, but they stayed through it. So they understood for an evangelical, it has one of the best endings for a film or a stage production. And if you're not religious, you'll be laughing along with them.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
When it first opened, there is one song that Raquel Castro does, and she's an ex-stripper who's found God, but she still speaks like a stripper. So I'm gonna say the name of the song, and it's a little controversial. You can cut it out if you want.
We're controversial.
It's a ballad, and she kind of knows what she's saying, but she doesn't. And as she's doing the song, she's trying to talk the lead, Luann, into letting her know it's okay to be who you are. And there's some real good themes in this, of don't judge a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But But the song is, I've got Jesus deep inside me and he's not pulling out.
Oh, no. That's the song.
So she's singing this song and doing a striptease on a pole that holds up the top of the county market. So on the live show, the very first opening night, I look out in the audience and there's a church group there, a group of Baptist women over the age of 70. And I'm like, oh my God, they're gonna burn the place down. They laughed so hard, and I saw them in the parking lot after, and they all were like coming at me, and I'm like, oh no. And they were just like, oh my God, I loved it. One woman, she was in her 80s. She came back two more times, brought her minister and her choir director.
Wow.
Whoa.
And I was at an after party at one of them, and this very good looking guy comes up to me and he goes, hi, you know, and he introduced himself as, I'm an evangelical. I'm like, who does that? And there's a couple that, see, there's some big reveals in the second act. There's some surprises.
Okay.
One, some people kind of wonder about. The second one, they have no idea. And then there's even a couple others. So this guy said to me, you know, I have to tell you, I almost left after the first act. He goes, it was very funny, but I was kind of offended. And I went, okay, I'm sorry. And he goes, no, I'm so glad I didn't. I loved it.
Wow.
He goes, I understood what you were trying to say.
Oh, good.
Because we don't make fun of anybody, you know?
Yeah.
We have to be able to laugh at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, everything's a play on words, you know? Like, there was no intention on anything. So, but it's funny because I've had some people, I was interviewed on a show in rural America, and it was two guys, and they said one of their wives was offended, and then she sat through the whole thing and loved it by the end.
Well, that's awesome.
We don't want to offend anybody.
Right.
But John Root, who plays the preacher, he plays Reverend John Cyrus Mountain. He was in Avenue Q on Broadway, and he said, Bill, the show's not a hit until somebody walks out. So really what it comes down to, and I know that was a long-winded answer to your question.
That's fine.
Expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have fun with it. You have to have fun with it. And bring in a team of people that have the same vision as you. I mean, the fact that we shot that in 6 days, in one day, my director shot 54 pages.
Whoa.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
This crew... Because my director was not yelling or screaming or anything like that, they got behind him.
Yeah.
And at the end, everyone was like, we just did 54 pages during COVID with COVID compliance officers.
That's even more insane.
Don't let anyone tell you you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quit your day job. Seriously, I got laid off and I had never... I worked in corporate America and I wrote at the same time. I did two careers for a long time, but I worked remotely so I could do it with my eyes closed and I was making really good money and I got laid off in 2020 and I had been working since I was 15 and I was 60 when I made the movie. And I thought, you know what? I've never been on unemployment in my entire life. Nobody's hiring. We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
I'm going to take the damn unemployment
right.
and I'm just going to write. And then what came out of that, I created a gap in my resume. Corporate America does not like gaps.
Yeah. Isn't that the worst?
It's awful. And then we started making the movie. The gap got bigger. And I had saved enough money to do it at the time. But over a period of a few years, I'm back working again in the workforce. Yeah. And I have a manager and I have an agent. I have scripts out the door and the whole thing. But this business... A friend of mine who's a very pretty well-known actor said to me, Bill, we're in the business of random success.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So when we realize that, you might get a payday and that's got to last you, but you got to get your next gig going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the way I look at it, and it's funny because I'm now working for a nonprofit and my role in helping them, because it's really helping people find jobs. The unemployment rate in California is 5.7.
Oh,
it's the highest in the country.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So they've made me a sector focus specialist specializing in the entertainment industry.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow.
So I get to help out and I can walk to it. It's right around the corner from my house.
That's nice. Hey, that's
and I've
the
got
best.
Scripts out the door. And like I said, but you just kind of keep doing it because you like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have is there a favorite? Do you prefer it as a play, or do you like it as the movie, or two totally different things?
It's a really good question. I like the movie a lot. I thought he did a good job with it. It's not easy to turn. Well, it is and it isn't. I've seen, you know, think about how many plays we've seen turned into movies. There's tons of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, musicals or plays. And I think most of them have worked. You know, like Hedwig started as an off Broadway show, mm-hmm. been around forever. Mm-hmm. The movie was okay. I didn't hate it. Little Shop of Horrors. Mm-hmm. I liked the play better than the movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I for sure.
There's something about being in the theater. Like, mm-hmm. I remember opening night at the Ruskin Group Theater, where it first went up. The place was packed. There were no seats for me. So they took a seat and they put me right in the middle of the aisle. So looking right at it, talk about like, oh my God, what if this blows?
Hey, I'm in the middle.
It's like, what if I have to go to the bathroom and I lose the opening night? You know, I have to pee. Hold on. I don't want to miss anything. So what's happened now is, because it's kind of gone full circle, the next step for it is the play, which I had to convert it from the movie back to the play because it's different. We rewrote it a little. And that was quite a job. Now it's out to a place called Concordia Theatricals. And what they do is they publish it. And that's what you want to have happen with your play or your musical. You end up getting it published. And there's a few mm-hmm. different publishing out there, but Concordia is one of the biggest. It takes 6 months to get it published. Wow. I reached out to him a couple months ago and he's like, Bill, you got 2 months left. I'm like, what do you mean left? You know, it's like, so I should be hearing fairly soon. I'm praying that they want to publish it, because then that means whoever wants to put it up anywhere in the world can put it up. Now, the movie, you know, as I mentioned, will be relaunched. But what we're trying to do in the meantime, because it is still on YouTube Movies, but it's through an aggregator. It's a whole other conversation. And and our distributor, who's been great, he said, Bill, well, I asked him, because it's not in the foreign market and that's where I'm going to make my money. And he just hasn't, he's trying to get it on YouTube channels over there. See, the whole business has changed. He even said to me, if this was like 8 years ago, they could have sold off the rights across 20 countries, and I would have already made my investors their money back.
Oh my gosh.
Doesn't work that way anymore.
No.
Everybody's so what we're doing is we have a YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and we're waiting to hear from Google in order to rent or sell the film through our YouTube channel for the time being.
Cool.
Yeah,
we do have a website, paradisebluegrassmusical.com. Mm-hmm. And it will tell you where you can see the film. So what we want to do is, at least until October, once we get that approved, I'm setting up a business account with another bank. And we're going to market it ourselves in 12 English-speaking countries, just to draw people to it. And then they rent and watch. And then hopefully I can start making a dent in it.
Yeah,
because it takes a couple of years to get the money back to your investors. And some of them are totally fine. And others are getting a little, you know, little
itchy. Mm-hmm. They're like, where's my money?
Yeah. And we believe me, and that's the other thing. If anyone's going to be making an independent film, make sure that you start with an entertainment attorney who really looks at the contract that you're giving out to investors, because it's almost like there's so much risk that is put in the contract. It's pretty much saying to the investor, take your money and run. They need to know that there's that much risk.
I never knew all this stuff. That's really
I mean, seriously, like one friend of mine, he heard that I had a film out. I hadn't heard from him in 40 years. Wow. And this guy reaches out, well, Bill, you know, I'm going broke. You must be making money. I just didn't
respond. Oh, my gosh.
That's ridiculous.
You know, and then of course, though, you have the ones from years ago, like The Full Monty. Or what's the famous one? The horror film in the woods. Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. I'm having a senior moment.
Okay.
So what You kind of already answered the hardships and easy parts. Did you? Did you answer that? You gave a very detailed answer.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's all about pre-production.
Yeah.
Have everything ready before you go. So if you're going to move a play into a film, it's a whole different venue. Mm-hmm. I mean, ours is different because it kind of feels like a theater production, but then it feels like a film, and then it feels like a reality TV show because that's part of the storyline. But it's a different, like originally when we started doing it, I was looking at exterior locations. I was looking at places in LA where they were broken down towns that you rent the whole place. But I would have had to have found more investors. It was not. We shot it on a soundstage in Burbank. So we have two sets. That's it. The first one is the county market. And he was very creative. And we rented a jib, which is like a big crane that moves over. And then we had to build a coal mine. So my set designer built it on the other side of the set, on the same lot.
Wow. Oh, that's so cool.
It was that so really cool. And she made it with like mesh and this weird stuff, but it doesn't look like that when you see it. And I'm just like, because the play only had one location. And then we did have a coal mine, but we did it through lighting. Because on stage, you have to be more creative with it. But, you know, film is a visual, you know, type of thing. So, I'm still thinking of the name of that film. But anyway, go ahead.
That's hilarious. You're also, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're also working on adapting 29 Gifts, or have you already adapted that?
Oh, 29 Gifts. I adapted it. Yeah, it's out all over town.
Okay.
Just haven't gotten a bite on it. A lot of people have seen it, but it went out to, you know, numerous places, and now we're just waiting to hear, but that's part of this game.
Yeah.
You know, like I've written so many scripts. I mean, the fact that I sold two to Lifetime and one was made in 2018, 2019, Blair Witch Project. That's the name of the film.
Oh, I was thinking of
Blair Witch. Top of my head.
But that's like a great film.
Oh, it made me sick to my stomach because the moving camera and I'm in the theater going, it was, but hey, what a success story that was.
Yeah.
You know, each place has its own thing of how they do things, and you either adjust or you don't. And, you know, if anyone who's writing, and this is the biggest lesson I can tell anyone, there's no such thing as writing. There's only rewriting.
Okay.
And I've had more people hand me a script and I'll say, how many drafts did you do? I did one really thorough one.
No.
It's not going to be good. I'm upset already. You know, most of my scripts, minimum 15 to 20 rewrites before I even show it to anybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what I'll do is I'll send it to like five people with like four or five questions where they can't answer yes or no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's smart.
And plus people, if you hand someone a script, you don't want them handing it back going, that was cute.
Right. Yeah.
Because
they're not going to give you anything. Yeah.
Doesn't help me.
Because they're like, I've never written a script. So here, this is great.
Yeah, that was good. Better than I could do. Yeah.
So, that part. But but 29 Gifts, I knew the author. And and have you guys read the book?
No. I'm familiar with it, but I haven't read it. I think my aunt read it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cammie Walker, she was what a fighter. What a fighter she was, because she had already overcome some addiction issues and some other stuff and got her life together and married actually a friend of mine. And that's how it came to me originally.
That's cool.
And then we had the rights to it a long time ago. And then she got sick, and the person I was working for has passed away. Mm-hmm. And then I lost the rights to it for a while. I got a call over COVID from my agent. Bill, do you have anything that is kind of spiritually uplifting or, you know, falls into that category? And I went, I used to. Mm-hmm. So I reached out and I had to go through, you know, the publisher, the agent, The family, two ex-husbands, the mother. I mean, I had to go through everybody. Everyone was great. Everyone was very gracious and stuff. And they just wanted to see her story get told. And that's what I wanted to do. And I'm hoping someday it gets made because it's an important message. And and even though she still had to deal with some demons, she never lost sight of giving back.
Yeah.
It was still about giving the gifts. And that 29-day gift giving challenge changed a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
Her life was not in vain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is your process when it comes to adapting an art medium, whether it's a play or a book, into a film? Like, how do you start and how do you get to the end game?
That's a really good question. I loved adapting the book. I hope to do more. I've been trying to get work doing that because I really enjoyed the process. Really what it is for me, and it varies because I got to adapt that without the author had passed away. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to honor the family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her ex-husbands, one of them is a friend of mine. They had gotten divorced. He's in the book and quite a bit. And I just wanted to honor what her message was. So that was the first thing, was making sure that that was going to be handled. Because like I had one producer who read the script and loved it and said, Bill, you know, it's a little tame. I really love it, though. Could he have cheated on her?
Oh my God. Add the drama.
And I said to him, no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, you really need to add something like that. And he started yelling at me. And I went, we're not optioning that to you. You know?
Yeah.
No, her family and her and all of them, they should be, you know, Hollywood will sometimes change a story, but I think it should only be done if it's still honoring the author and the message and the family. There's no,
absolutely.
You know, money shouldn't come before it, because you can still, I think her story is one that people would pay to see, you know, or would want to see. So the process for me is I usually do an outline first. I'll put down, you know, based on the chapters, and then, I have to think about it from a film standpoint. Like my manager is really good about getting me to kind of look at a scene from a different angle. So the first draft would be the outline and then what's called a beat sheet. And the beat sheet is simply from the outline and what comes into my head of this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens. So it could be, you know, Cammy's in a yoga class. Cammy goes here, whatever. So then once I have the beat sheet done, what I try to do, and I've only done it a little bit, but I want to do more of it, is write the entire script just in action. No dialogue. Back in
and add the dialogue.
That's cool.
Because the one thing that you always hear from readers, producers, directors, actors, Bill, you're telling too much. Show more. Don't tell, show. And then you sit through, you know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which is based on a play, and it's all tell. So that's what I do with it. And then I write a first draft. And then when I feel it's ready to show to people, I pick people who I know will be brutally honest with me, but still kind.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions can be as simple as, what was your favorite thing about the script and why? Favorite characters and why?
Why?
Yeah. Who did you dislike? And give me three reasons why you disliked them. So really get, because then it makes it easier for the reader too.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people will hand it back and go, and you can just tell. They're like, oh, they hated that. Because I was a reader for a long time too when I first moved out here. And I was also the head of development for a film company. And for Mark Harris, who produced Crash and Gods and Monsters.
Nice.
In total, I've probably read 250 scripts, probably.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, out of that, 95% were not very good.
Wow. Okay.
I actually was an intern for Silver Picture Productions ages ago. And what they had me do was read scripts. And oh my God, there were, I think I only passed one script on to the next person because I was like, oh, that one's actually good. But the rest, I was like, wow, why did I just waste my time with this script?
Well, it's like now I'll get coverage. My manager will get coverage done on scripts. And she used to work for Spielberg years ago and William Morris and a bunch of other places. And she has some type of AI system that does it. And my agent had said, oh, we don't want AI doing that. I'm like, yeah, we do. I'm serious. The coverage was fantastic. We're about suggestions compared to a young human who doesn't have a lot of experience reading it, like myself, like you were at the time, passing on something. And I tried to give critiques, but this, I had coverage on something, on a thriller that I wrote recently. And my agent read the script. She hated it, right? Oh. Hated it. My manager sent me the coverage. It got a 7.5 out of 10 with suggestions and recommended it.
Wow.
So when I said that to her, she was like, oh, no, there's no place we could send this. So I did another draft based on the notes from AI, because AI gave me notes and my manager gave me notes. My agent, who I love her, but agents aren't in the business of doing that. She was just I don't know, not right. How does that help me?
Yeah, right.
Not at all.
Not at all. So I took those notes and I rewrote the whole thing. And I enjoyed it because it made sense.
Yeah.
So that's where AI can be good.
Right.
I did take 29 GIFs at one point. My manager wanted me to put it through chat, you know, GB, whatever it is. Uh-huh. And so it took me a long time because you had to break it down into text and put it in. I put it in. I got it back. I will never do that again.
Oh, really?
Oh, it had Kenya prostitute. And she's not one. It never has been at all.
No.
In the rewrite of the script, I was like, is this that other producer who wanted to make it work?
Right.
And they introduced other characters that I don't even know about. I was just weird. Like, what the hell are you doing? So no, what I'll use it for, like if I have an idea on dialogue and I'll say, can you give me something that might be more upbeat or whatever? And then I never use it verbatim. It just gets me to think.
Yeah.
And like log lines. It's really helped me with a log line.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, that's helped a lot. But sometimes it's too much, so I have to cut it back. Mm-hmm. But it gave me something different. And that's what I think we need to know. AI, I'm hearing a lot of negativity. And I'm hearing a lot of positive, but we're figuring out it doesn't know everything.
No.
Oh, yeah. The other day, my boyfriend actually twice now had it do math for him. And so he had it do math one night. And then it was like something super easy that he was able to do in his head. And he was like, you got it wrong. And like messaged him. And it said something creepy about like, oh, I'm sorry, human mistake or something like that.
Yeah, no, there's going to be some stuff with it that I think it. I mean, I hear a lot of people pushing back on it, and yet it can, it's helped my friends of mine put together like pitches and things like that, you know, pitch decks and things like that. It can be good for, but I don't think it's going to put writers out of business. I just don't.
Good.
And Amazon will now, it had a thing that said, we will not take any books written by AI.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I think if it's used right, it can be good.
I agree.
So when it comes to adapting, do you prefer adapting a book or a play? Or is it just totally different apples and oranges?
A book is a lot more extensive, you know, because you got to read it a couple times.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then break it down from there. Adapting a play, at least my experience in doing it, and I don't have a ton of experience doing it, but of what I did was a much easier process because remember, it was, I had been with that play for a while, so I knew it. Mm-hmm. And then, like I mentioned, that we were looking at exterior locations, I would have had to rewrite it again to have been more about, you know, the visual piece of it. But since we then decided to shoot it on a soundstage, I only had to adjust it a little bit. And our director was fantastic about sticking to the script. He was really good. He didn't have many notes at all. Like, we wrote another script based on a play. We did put it up in Hollywood, but a very short run. We did it as a way for our investors gave us the money to literally get Paradise made originally. So we had put it up as a play, and they wanted the screenplay of it. This was a few years ago, and this is something that's been sitting around for a while. So we rewrote it, and our director was so instrumental in helping us get this latest draft done. It's called Roses. We added him as one of the writers.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and that's out to a few places as well. Dan Florek from Law and Order is kind of attached to it.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. That's awesome. Very cool.
We are now to our wrap-up questions, which sometimes are more difficult than the actual questions. So first is, do you have a favorite book-to-film adaptation?
Oh, wow. The World According to Garp.
Oh, really?
With Robin Williams.
Oh, I do love Robin Williams.
Have you guys seen the movie?
Actually, no.
Have you read the book?
No.
The World According to Garp, you won't be able to put it down.
Really?
Yeah, it's really big in the late 80s, I want to say.
Okay.
And it's one of those that you carry with you because you you want to find out what's going to happen next.
All right. Okay. Well, getting put on our list.
Yep.
Yeah.
And do you have a least favorite? Like, they just bombed that adaptation. Why did they do it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of what I saw that everybody was excited about, and I thought it was a real stinko. I'm trying to remember what it was.
There are several.
There's many.
Oh, no, there are many, but probably, and this is going to sound, boy, is this going to really date me? But no, I didn't really read the book. I was going to say Valley of the Dolls, but The Stepford Wives.
Oh, really?
It's a good book.
I haven't read the book.
Yeah, it's an intense book. It's an intense book.
And the movie didn't do it justice?
You know what? I'm thinking of the second one. The first one was kind of weird, although I did like it. Yeah, I mean, I think usually when it's a book being adapted, with Tom Hanks, horrible movie. And it's not his fault. It was really big during the 80s also. And it was about the stock market. What is it called? Bonfire Vanities. Bonfire Vanities.
I don't think I've ever heard of that one.
Yeah, me neither. And Tom Hanks was in it. I think it was him. And it was just like god awful. It tanked too because there was a lot of expectations around it.
That's
the worst part, is when everybody's expecting it to be the same.
Uh-huh. Is there a book that you would like to see adapted?
None that I can think of right now. There is another book that was adapted that was absolutely horrible that just popped into my head.
Which one?
Conversations with God.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh is a fantastic book.
Okay.
It kind of covered everything I ever believed about the universe.
Yeah. Wow.
Then they turned it into a movie. And I know the guy who wrote the screenplay. I don't know him well, but I know of him. And I went to the screening at the Agape International Spiritual Center, which I attend. Oh. Michael Beckwith runs it, and it's here in LA. And the movie, and Neil Donald Walsh was there, and he has a beard. And the LA Times, and I'm paraphrasing this, but the LA Times said, "We can send a man to the moon, but Hollywood can't make a good beard." And they ripped this thing to shreds. Donald Walsh is a really gentle man. I have met him a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
The book is one of those two that you can't put down. He had broken his back and then ended up journaling. And it was about his conversations with God.
Wow.
And yeah, there's like three books, but book one is what the movie was made on. And I love that book so much. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that they were going to make it into a movie, I went, okay, we'll see. and it was god awful.
Oh, yeah. No.
Because the guy who played him, the beard, he reminded me of an actor on Mad TV. He looked like one of the guys on Mad TV, and I'm like, that's not good casting.
No.
And that'll kill a movie right there.
Right. Cast is so important.
Yeah.
Okay, well, do you have a movie that you wish was a book? Like, maybe you wish there was more detail added to it and anything like that?
Oh, my God. I've never thought of that, I don't think. I don't think I've seen a movie and go, that'd make a good book.
No, that's like our hardest question.
If I've done that. Okay, I got one for you. This is my favorite film of all time.
Okay.
And I've seen it at least 12 times.
Wow.
It's called Defending Your Life.
Okay.
With Albert Brooks, Meryl Streep, Rip Torn, and Lee Grant.
Wow. How have I never heard of this movie?
Defending Your Life will change your life. It's probably my most favorite Meryl Streep film. She's the most likable character. And without giving anything away, because it has one of the most uplifting yet emotional endings in a film I've ever seen. Wow. I cry every time. It's about when you die, you go to Judgment City.
Okay.
And in Judgment City, you can eat anything you want, never gain weight. And the other part is you are there to look at certain days in your life and prove whether or not you have walked through fear. And if you have walked through fear in this incarnation, then you move on in the universe. And if you haven't, you have to come back again.
Wow.
And you're going to see how... you're going to start reflecting on your own life.
Yeah. And that sounds like a powerful movie.
There's some powerful comments on it that she says to him, like, he made this big mistake on something. And I don't want to say what it is, but she goes, but you never went back and faced that fear again. You never got that side of your brain.
Wow.
And wow. I remember I'm 28 years clean and sober.
Wow. And congratulations.
Thanks. I got sober in Boston, and at 6 months, I had to speak at this big, big meeting, and I'm walking through the Boston Common and I'm scared to death.
Oh.
And I had seen that film, and that popped into my head. You never went back and faced that fear. So you never got that side of your brain. So I thought, all right, I want that side of my brain. So I went to go get my hair cut in the Back Bay. And it's this place I'd never been to before. This hairdresser had never cut my hair. And I sat down, and this woman's cutting my hair. We get talking, and she shares with me, out of the blue, that she's 7 days sober.
Wow.
And I get to share with her my fear and how I'm going to speak at this meeting at like 60 days or whatever I had, 6 months. I forgot how much time I had. To me, that was a God shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
We both needed to talk to each other. And I went to that meeting. I have no idea what I said. It was like a cramped room in Boston. And like they had like the old radiator heaters. And everybody was like sitting on the windowsill. I was like, oh my God, just horrifying, you know. But I'll never forget that. And it was that film that popped into my head.
Wow.
Aww.
Yeah. And whenever I mention it at a meeting, and someone's seen it, they're just like, Defending Your Life. I'm like, yeah, man. That's the film.
And what is your favorite book?
Oh my God. It's no, I have a bunch of books right behind me here.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say, this is really weird that I'm gonna say this. Michael Beckwith's book, Spiritual Liberation, is a really good book.
Okay.
Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. I read a lot of spiritually based books. Mm-hmm. The World According to Garp is a great fiction book, fantastic book. It really is. It's one of those that you'll read it on the beach all summer. Yeah, it's a thick book, but it's really good. It's so good. Nothing better than when you just read a book that just pulls you right in.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's the best. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite.
Yeah, it really is. And books now, paperback and hardcover, are outselling Kindle.
Good. finally.
People want it in their hands. You know, like, yes. Like the book that I wrote, you know. I've got two more coming out. And it was just, it was a fun process. It's a fun process doing it. And I think everybody has a book in them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, awesome. I love books, and my cousins have actually been like, Brie, why haven't you written a book yet? I'm like, because I haven't sat down and thought about it.
You have all the time in the world right now.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm 64 years old. I didn't write the book until I was 62. Wow. 62. It's a series, so I'll have two more coming out, but I've already had friends of mine pass away. Under the age of 65, several of my best friends have already died, and they were healthy as a horse. We can think we have a lot of time, but we don't.
Yeah. Right. Tomorrow's not promised for sure.
No, it really isn't.
You already kind of answered this, but I'll ask it just in case your answer is not defending your life. But what is your favorite movie?
It's between two. And I do love Defending Your Life. Now, Defending Your Life is probably my favorite movie. A close second is The Color Purple.
Yeah.
I love The Sting. I like movies out of the 70s mostly and 80s. But The Color Purple, I thought, was a beautifully made film. Defending Your Life.
Yeah.
6 Degrees of Separation, which was a play.
All right. Well, before we say goodbye, where can our listeners find you? And is there anything else that you want to kind of pitch to our listeners?
Check out my book, Uncle Bill's Animal Tales, Life Lessons for Adults on Amazon. It's a fun read. It's one that you'll read on the beach in that day. but it's just a fun read. It's not for kids. Looks like a kid's book, and it's not.
Sounds like a kid's book.
Yeah, Uncle Bill's Animal Tales, Life Lessons for Adults. It's about my experiences with animals and how I feel that they are our greatest teachers and healers.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. And then the film, Keep Your Eyes Open. You can either watch it now on YouTube Movies, but I would, I don't know where it's going to be. It was on Amazon for a while, and it was on Tubi. We just didn't make any money in regards to how it was being distributed. So now they're rethinking that. The soundtrack for Paradise, A Town of Sinners and Saints is on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, and YouTube Music.
Okay.
And that's kind of it right now. I mean, we're working on another play. I'm praying Paradise gets picked up by Concordia. It's an off-Broadway show. It needs to be on off-Broadway. It is, I mean, 19 original songs.
Yeah.
Bluegrass. Oh, it's really, and some of them are going to make you laugh your ass off. Others are going to make you cry.
Yeah.
The song that's amazing. Miss You and Same Old Me are just beautiful numbers that Cliff Wagner wrote. And then the one everyone has to light a bag of shit on fire. That one, people end up, I've heard from more people saying, we say that around the house now. Oh, go light a bag of shit on fire. Like, okay, great.
I love it.
That's the best. Yes. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been super fun. And as someone who is trying to make it in the film world, you've like inspired me. So thank you.
Yes. I'm glad I could help. You know?
Yeah.
That's all I was thinking too. While you were talking, I was like, oh, Brie, are you listening? Are you listening, Brie? So
we do it because we enjoy it.
It's a tough industry, but yeah, yes. I agree.
So is everything else.
Sorry. Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wonderful to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Guys, that was so much fun.
That was super fun.
I feel like Allie had absolutely no fucking clue what was being said half the time.
I mean, I could follow along. This is all very Hollywood talk, and I'm over here like, I'm just a little teacher. I just know classroom stuff.
I just want to watch the movie. Don't talk to me about optioning it and your budget. And
no, it was all really fascinating. I learned a lot, and I'm very actually getting with doing this podcast. I'm getting more and more into like the behind the scenes. And when I watch movies, I'm like, I bet that cost a lot, or I bet they had to do it like this. And I think I'm all fancy now.
Welcome to my life.
Yes.
I really enjoyed our conversation with Bill Robertson today.
I did too. It was fun. Mm-hmm. Very enlightening. I know. Like, because it's actually kind of fun that we have this because we compared Tuck Everlasting, which was play, movie, book, mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. summer. So,
yeah, it felt very.
I was understanding what he was saying when he was talking about play and like.
Yeah.
Stuff
yeah.
like that, because we just watched one.
Exactly. Yeah. I Very agree. Cool. I was thinking that too, actually.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, cool.
Stay tuned for an awesome episode on Monday.
Yes.
I'm not totally sure when I'm going to be releasing this episode just yet. So I don't know what's coming up next. Oh, if it's coming out in October though, spooky season. Welcome to Stephen King.
Yes. That'll be cool. Mm-hmm. Excited. Mm-hmm. All right. Cool.
All right. With that, this interview
went off script. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for sticking with us.
We hope you enjoyed it.
If you did, we would greatly appreciate it if you gave us 5 beautiful stars, reviewed, and subscribed.
You can also follow us on Facebook at Offscript, on Instagram at OffscriptPodcast21, and on TikTok at Offscript_pod.
Shout outs to Madame Ashen Creations for our adorable logo art.
And Adam Daniel for our incredible theme song.
And to Creative Cinephile Productions for producing our podcast.
See you next time.
Hi, I'm Serena.
And I'm Rachel.
We are the hosts of Book Tales.
If you like reading books,
drinking cocktails,
and Scottish accents,
then meet your new favourite podcast.
Come with us as we explore different themes from romanticy to horror and everything in between.
We pair each book with a bespoke cocktail and tell you everything you'll need to make one.
And each week, play our fun game tailored to each book.
Find Book Tales wherever you get your podcasts. So grab your book.
Grab your booze.
For Book Tales.